One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
It's all about the macro productions.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dateline NBC.
Jack Mary is Tack Theratrix.
I am Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Mumbai Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
not,
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff to German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault?
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
To Macroaggressions, I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you're watching us on Rockfin or Rumble or listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks a million. We appreciate the support. We couldn't do it without you. Have you rated the show yet? Oh, if you think we've earned 5 stars, we certainly would appreciate it. It'll take you 2 seconds on your podcast player. We're fighting the algorithms, baby. Listen, thank you to the sponsors. They make this show happen. Legal Shield has been in business for 50 years. In the United States and Canada, and they will give you access to an attorney in your area for $1 a day. It is the most affordable thing. It is the best deal you'll ever get. Lock it up, get in there, get yourself an attorney in your area that can do all kinds of things for you. You'll get an app on your phone. You'll push the button on the app. You say, I want to contact an attorney in my area. What do you need? They'll give you a drop-down menu, documents, last will and testament, medical directive, financial power of attorney, ding, 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 all these things. Send. You'll be contacted by an agent or by a lawyer in your area in the next 24 hours. And you get a call. Hey, what's going on? I'm down the street. I'm at this law firm. We're the ones that work with Legal Shield. Does Friday work for you? Great. Come on in. will knock all these things out. I mean, it is really a tool that you need to have. If you don't have your last will and testament, you have to get one. You just absolutely positively have to have one. And because the state will get involved in your affairs after you're dead, and that is a really bad place to be. But of course, nobody wants to spend a couple $1,000s to go get this stupid document done that you're never going to see, because the only time it'll be worth something to you is once you're dead. So I get it. I totally understand why there's not a huge enthusiastic rush to go get your last will and testament done, especially if you're like in a place where money isn't exactly growing on trees. So since you need it and you don't want to spend a bunch for it, man, do it in the very first month of signing up for Legal Shield. It's like $30 a month to get in there. Like, I mean, you can use this tool for a lot. So I'll tell you what, do this. Just go to the website that they have created for us. Take a look for yourself. See if it's a fit. If it's right for you, pull the trigger. If not, that's cool. www.don'tgetpushedaround.com is the place to do that. If you're driving or elsewhere and you can't write this down, don't sweat it. All of the links for my sponsors are always in the show notes, and they're also at the website macroaggressions.io in the partners page, so you can find it there if you ever think, oh, I needed to get that, but I don't remember where I saw it. Just go to the website. You'll find it all there. And speaking of the website, Christian Yordanov, he's my certified health practitioner. We've got him up there on the partners page of the website too. He's doing tremendous work. He ran me through a battery of tests when I turned 50 so that we could get a little baseline as to where I am and how I'm doing and what I need to maximize. And he can see under the hood. It's amazing. When you take these organic acid tests that he sends you, it comes in a box. You just piss in a cup and freeze it and send it back to him. It's real easy to do. It's not weird or invasive or anything like that. But you'll get the results, and he can see you're low in this area, you're high here. There's got to be something going on in your gut. I see what it is. It's this particular thing. These are the probiotics that you need for it. Stay away from antibiotics. Here are these things. Here are these capsules. You know, I mean, it's, but boy, I tell you, it's the right way to do it. You get a more targeted approach to your health where they take a look inside, as opposed to your doctor who's like throwing darts at the wall. Like, I don't know. Sounds like you might have this, or maybe you have this, or let's give you a prescription for antibiotics for this. Like they did with my mother. Didn't know what was wrong with her, gave her a prescription for antibiotics. The antibiotics screwed her up. I had to bring in Christian. Now Christian is working with my mother and he is bringing her back from the brink. Thank God. I mean, Christian Yordanov, no exaggeration. It might turn out that Christian Yordanov saves my mother's life. I'm not even kidding. I am not even slightly exaggerating on that one. So look, go to the website or go to the link in the show notes if you want to talk to Christian. If you're sick, man, you'd give anything to feel better. Christian can help you get on that path. He's a good guy. It's not going to cost you anything to talk to him. And just tell him you came from me and you guys will have a talk. He'll put you on a program if you want to. I ditched Western medicine a long time. Once I met Christian, it was over. So check it out for yourself. All right, before we start the show, I do want to say this. I do want to thank Jeff Medine down in Pueblo, Colorado at Blowback Gallery. What an event. Oh, and Steve Poikonen put this on in conjunction with a few other people, but he was a really leading voice in this. Blowback Gallery, BLOBACK Gallery in Pueblo, Colorado. It's like if you and me and all the other conspiracy theorists were art gallery owners and we're like, let's make an art gallery that conspiracy theorists would like, right? And make it interactive so everyone can play. So I played their version of cornhole, which is called cocaine in the Ukraine. And what you have is you have these hole and you have to throw either bags of money that have coins in it or these white rectangular pouches that have white powdered in it. So you're either throwing money or cocaine into the nose of Zelensky, which I thought was pretty good. There was another exhibit where you had these paper airplanes that were sort of like reinforced with masking tape. And on the paper airplanes, it says jet fuel does not melt steel beams. And they have three buildings set up and you have two semi-paper airplanes and you, during this carnival game, your job is to knock down three buildings or two planes. It's fucking great. I love Jeff. He's the best. They have the Georgia Guidestones bowling, which was rad, man. There's like a miniature version of the Georgia Guidestones and you had this ball and you had to roll it. And I mean, the whole thing. You know the balloons where there's like a big board and it's filled with balloons and you throw darts at the balloons and then they pop they had that set up. But when you threw darts at the balloons and the balloons popped, it was a war criminal puzzle. So like I remember I threw mine and it popped and I was so pissed because I forget who I got. Like Madeleine Albright, but I was so close to getting Henry Kissinger and I was bummed. So everyone that came out, they had bands. It went on for 2 days. I went down with Corey Hughes from my co-host of Day Zero and Bloody History. He's a JFK guy. We went down there. Jeff was down. Chris Yannick from Rained Out Rantcast was there. He came from Arkansas. People were coming from all over the place. It was really great to see them. I got to hang out with a lot of people. It was so much fun. Nice to see it. So I think they're going to do it each year. So next summer, if you're looking for a trip, if you're somewhere near Colorado or want to be near Colorado, and Jeff does this event again, it's worth it. Pueblo's cool. It's a sleepy little town. We all went out and had brunch on Sunday and in the downtown, which could use, you know, some help, I guess. But that's it. Next time you hear me talking about Blowback Gallery and you think that it might be... if you think you might want to do it, I suggest doing it. Even if you're not really into art, art was part of it, but there were bands and speakers. Lindsay Sharman came down there, Scott Armstrong, and there was a panel that we did. Scott Armstrong from Rebunked and Truthzilla. Lindsay Sharman was there from Rogue Ways and one of my other co-hosts on Day Zero. Steve Poikkanen was there. Chris Yannick was there from Rained Out Rantcast and AM Wake Up. It was just fun. Just a lot of people that you might recognize from if you like this sort of stuff and you watch it. And then just an unusual group of bands that played throughout the day. I mean, all kinds of music, man. It was fucking wild. So thank you to Jeff and the crew over there. And thanks to Steve and the crew for helping to put it on. It was a blast. Now let's talk about... Let's get down to business, shall we? Because the New World Order is coming for us. So I decided to name this one the New Multipolar World Order because that's kind of where we're going. You know, it's like if the New World Order had to play like a road team or something. You know what I mean? Like there was another team that came in and was like, "Oh, we see you in your World Economic Forum and your NATO and your United Nations. We see what you're doing. You're trying to take over the world. And we don't like that. We don't want to be a part of that. We're not interested in this. I mean, we're not against world government or governance or grouping up these countries, but we're just not interested in the flavor that the West is selling. And that's kind of where we've come to, which is, you know, if the Western New World Order group had been a little bit more strategic about this, they wouldn't have pissed off all these people, all these countries. They wouldn't have targeted them so heavily. They wouldn't have done some awful things to them socially. Because what they've done is they've driven these countries away from them, away from this new world order. And by doing so, in doing that, you've kind of forced them into the arms of each other. They've kind of had to, like Russia doesn't want to or didn't want to go start their own version of a SWIFT banking system or have to peg the ruble to gold. They did that as a response to what the West was doing to Russia, right? So they sort of had to do these things. So if anyone in the New World Order is complaining that they now have competition, they have nobody to blame but themselves. They created the competition by their own actions. And so move over, NATO. Now there's a new acronym in town. It's BRICS, B-R-I-C-S, or B-R-I, or S-C-O, or N-D-B, or A-S-E-A-N. Yeah, we haven't heard about that one. Well, we're going to get to that one. We're going to talk about all these. We've talked about most of them. Well, we've talked about all of them except Aishon. Aishon? Asian? Aishon? We're going to get to that in a minute. It's so stupid, the fucking acronyms. I swear to God, one of these days I'm going to do an episode and you're all going to laugh when you see it, when you open up your player, and it's just going to be "fuck the acronyms" will be the title or something like that. You know, it'll just be me going off on an unhinged rant backed with evidence, of course, but about why I hate acronyms so much. But anyway, let's start with the longest acronym, which would be BRICS. We've talked about them a bunch. We've talked about them recently. We will continue to talk about them. And the reason we will is because when you're talking about the New World Order, you have to talk about their competition. And the BRICS nations, BRICS Plus now, they are doing it the right way, I must say. Now, I'm not in favor of world I am in favor of decentralization right now. These countries are seeking to centralize. So just by default, I'm against it. But I do recognize that your enemy has a big team, you need a big team too, right? So I do understand the reasoning for it. I'm not trying to pretend like I think they should all go decentralized and that's the best way to fight this group. No, probably centralization is the best way to fight this group, but the problem is centralization. So you've got these five primary countries. Started with four primary countries, BRIC, Brazil, Russia, India, China, right? And early on, it really was just Russia, India, and China. And then the fucking CIA got involved and they started manipulating things. And they wanted this group to pick up Brazil. They actually, like the New World Order existing group, CIA, the West, NATO, all that group. They, when Brazil, Russia, and the RIC in BRICS, back before 2009, it was just the three of them, not officially, but they were working together and they were looking to expand. And America wanted them to take on Brazil. And the reason why they wanted them to take on Brazil was that Brazil's biofuel industry was a mess. It was being pushed by the bankers and they thought of Brazil as like a state hand grenade that they were going to roll into this party that Brazil, India, and China was having. They're like, oh fuck, we're going to see if we can make it their idea. We're going to see if we can convince them covertly that it's their idea that they need to add Brazil. We the West want them to add Brazil because it's like taking on a time bomb that's going to blow up. Well, here's the problem. It didn't blow up. it worked out great actually for this, and it became it became BRIC, BRIC. That was 2009. In 2011, just 2 years later, they added the S. Then it became officially BRICS with the South Africa at the end. And now, it's funny. It's kind of cartoonish, right? It's the, you know, it's like the coyote is like setting up the rock, you know, on the steep cliff above the road and pouring the bird seed out for the roadrunner, and he's pulling on the string and it won't come down, right? That's Brazil up there. America's pulling on the string, trying to get Brazil to fall down on the roadrunner and kill it. And it won't. And it's not until the US gets down and looks at the bird seed, pulls on the rope itself, that the whole thing falls on it, which is where we are right now. Cartoon world, with the boulder falling on the New World Order, which is fine. They deserve it. So it was BRICS in 2011, and it stayed that way until just this year. This year, they went crazy. They doubled in size. They added five more. They were supposed to add six more, but Argentina pulled out because Javier Milei is heavily manipulated by the West. He is a whore for Israel. That is fucking obvious to anybody with eyeballs, and whatever they tell him to do, he does. So and he was installed, by the way, so they officially expanded it to 10 countries on January 1st of 2024. So that's when it went. And those countries are Egypt, Ethiopia, Iran, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates. Let's talk a little bit about these. They're, you know, I joke about the New World Order, West, United Nations policy as being like ready, fire, aim. I will say this. That is not the BRICS policy. The BRICS are very strategic in this. Now, of course, when you give yourself 13 years in order to make sure that you want to add these countries, you can do your due diligence. But they didn't just randomly pick these five countries. These five countries are extremely important from a logistics standpoint. And we've done, like we talked about this before. If you can go back, and I'm not going to beat this dead horse, but I do want to mention some of the reasons why these countries are important. Egypt has the Suez Canal. It has the Red Sea and the Mediterranean Sea. Extremely important for moving goods and services through the Mediterranean, through the Red Sea, that shaves off 3 weeks. the oil tankers that are allowed to go through the Suez Canal that aren't flying Israeli or American flags, they're fine. Oh, well, it's not the Suez Canal, I should say. It's Bab el Mandeb, but whatever. That region in the Red Sea, if you're coming and going up through the Red Sea, like you're trying to get to the Mediterranean or coming from the Mediterranean, you have to go through the Suez Canal, and that is controlled by Egypt. And so they have access to the Mediterranean to the north, they have access to the Red Sea to the east, and they have the Suez Canal. Egypt, extremely important to this, okay? If for no other reason, then you want it to fall into your control if you're BRICS, as opposed to somebody else's control, because like I said, it's a choke point. And if your enemy gets it, even if you don't want Egypt that much, which you do, but even if you didn't, you would want it just so your enemy wouldn't have it. So Ethiopia is on this list. I'd say this is the least strategic of the five that they added, but don't sleep on Ethiopia. They are geographically in the Gulf of Aden area. And they're really like your entry into a part of Africa. Kenya is probably the more logical spot. But they're working on that. They're working on that one. Don't worry. Iran is on the list. Extremely important, not just from an oil producing geopolitical standpoint, but just from a geographic standpoint. They have the Strait of Hormuz on their southwestern side, and the Gulf of Oman to the south, Persian Gulf to the west. They are geographically locked in. Like, they are in a spot where if you don't have them as a partner, then they can make things difficult for you from a logistic standpoint, much in the same way Egypt is. Egypt and Iran, even if you took the oil out of Iran, just their geography makes them quite necessary for this. Saudi Arabia is on this list. Of course, Persian Gulf, Red Sea. These are waterways that shipping lanes for oil. That's what we're talking about. And last on this list, United Arab Emirates, Persian Gulf, Strait of Hormuz. So if you look at the, I don't want to turn this into a geography class, but if you look at the Strait of Hormuz, it's a kink in this. It looks like where two pieces of land were together at one point, and through some sort of maybe tectonic shifting or whatever, I don't know, maybe an expanding earth, they have pulled apart from each other. So they look like they fit nicely, but it's a very thin line between them. So you have Iran on one side of this very narrow strait, and you have the United Arab Emirates on the other side. So they got both of them. So nobody's going to screw with this, right? So they have secured. So you just have to look at this like from a strategic war footing type, securing the high ground, securing areas that are necessary for travel, trade, things like that. The original criteria for entering this group, and the reason why we're starting with the BRICS is that I just think that they're going to be the most logical challenger to this new world order. It's not to say that there won't be others, and we're going to get to the others, but I want to start with this one because of that. And this original criteria was to join BRICS was that you had to have a large population, you had to have large territory, and you had to have a large economy. Well, that's changed. I mean, the United Arab Emirates might have a large economy now based on oil, but geographically, it's very tiny. So that doesn't really work. It's some, I would describe this. I would describe this addition of five of these particular five countries, four of them in particular, as petrogeography, right? It's geography of the world from an oil standpoint, and not pulling it out of the ground, but moving it around once you've got it out of the ground. And so when you take a look at the map of what BRICS controls, they're smart. They are saying right now that emerging markets is a focus of BRICS Plus, but it's not just any emerging market. It's emerging markets in a strategic location. Here is who is under consideration right now to join it. And they're under consideration. Again, like I said, the last time they added more countries was 13 years ago. So I don't know what the time frame is going to be on this. I don't know if this is one of those things where We added five. It was easy to integrate these new five. Let's add five more next year. I don't know. But these are the countries that are under consideration. Pakistan, which India fucking hates this idea. And it might not happen simply because one of the originals is like, we can't work with these people. They don't bring anything to the table and we hate them. We don't want them out. So Pakistan is being considered, but I don't know that it will make it. Turkey is on the list. It'll make it. Thailand is on the list. Malaysia, Venezuela, Indonesia, Cuba. Now we start to get into oil. Nigeria has oil. Kenya, Algeria, Bahrain. Kenya's interesting. It's part of BRI. Thailand and Malaysia is part of BRI. Turkey's part of BRI. So my guess in this one is that you would probably not pick Cuba because I don't know what they bring to the table. You would probably not pick Algeria, because I'm not sure what they bring to the table. Geographically, I don't think they're... in Bahrain brings oil, but and no corporate taxes unless you are in the oil industry there. And then corporate taxes are through the fucking roof, like 46%. So I don't know. I think that Turkey is in. I think that Indonesia is in. I think Kenya is in. I think Nigeria is in. Thailand and Malaysia. I don't know. See, here's the thing is that with some of this is going to be the overlap of this Venn diagram will be substantial because you're going to have Belt and Road Initiative groups that are already working with a lot of these countries in some form or fashion through ports. It might be a calculation that the BRICS make that they need them under their supervision as well. I don't know. We'll see. BRICS Plus right now, this group of 10, just to put this in perspective, I want you to understand, when I say that they're going after like petrogeography, the BRICS Plus group right now, 10 countries out of on a planet with like 190 something countries, just these 10 countries are responsible for 42% of the global oil supply.
Yikes.
42%. So what that means is that, I mean, number one on this list, I mean, I don't know if you guys know or not, but like, number one on the global oil supply is America. Number two is, so the ones that they had before, Russia, Brazil, and China. Russia was third on the list in terms of oil supply. Third on the list. China's fifth. Brazil is eighth, right? So there exists in their existing form, they had three countries that were in the top 10 in oil production. This year, they added three more. They now picked up the second overall in Saudi Arabia, the sixth in United Arab Emirates, and the ninth in Iran. So they now have, in terms of the global oil, they have the second biggest producer, the third, the fifth, the sixth, the eighth, and the ninth, taking over the oil industry to the extent that they can. They have a GDP combined of $30.24 trillion. This represents 28.9% of the world's roundup. Let's just say 29% of the world's GDP. 29% of the world's gross domestic product comes out of this. Gross world's product. I don't know. However you want to frame that. If this group wanted to do their own petrodollar, petro brick, they could. They got 42% of the oil supply behind them. They've got Russia already going to a gold-backed currency. You've got the BRICS already going to a gold-backed currency. Could they instead create a basket that has gold and oil and other things in it? Maybe. It certainly wouldn't be the worst idea I've ever heard for them to create their new currency. We're going to the New Development Bank. This is something that they start, the BRICS Bank. It's like the BRICS version of the World Bank. Okay. It's called the New Development Bank. It was started 10 years ago. It's headquartered in Shanghai and it lends out $34 billion every single year for development capital in these groups. That's what it was put there for. BRICS is basically like, we're going to work together. We're going to develop infrastructure together. Belt and Road is also kind of part of this, but more importantly, we're going to trade with each other. So if you have a development project in one of these countries that if completed would benefit everybody in this group, right? Like, let's say you needed to build out some sort of infrastructure project with, like, I don't know, you needed more power at your ports. And so but you don't have the money to go create this giant gigawatt factory that you're going to need to build somewhere nearby and whatever. And so but if you're a member of BRICS Plus, you just go to the New Development Bank, the NDB, and say, this is what we're doing. We know you've got money. We're part of your group. We need to borrow money. We want to build this thing. This is how we do it. Okay. They've spent a lot of this money. They've got a ton. Let's move on here. I told you I would give you a ASEAN, which is a new acronym for you. ASEAN, ASEAN. And if you say it fast enough, it sounds like you're saying Asian. And if you're saying Asian, that would be really funny because it's Association of Southeast Asian Nations. ASEAN. Asian. Jeez, fuck. I want to strangle these people. I swear to God. These 10 countries that are part of ASEAN have decided to ditch the dollar and promote their own native currencies for cross-border transactions. I think this is a very smart move for them. To do it now, gotten them all bombed to smithereens if they'd done it 10 years ago, but to do it now, yeah, of course you should have been doing this all along. The only reason why you weren't is because America came in and threatened you. That's why. So the fact that you're not scared of the bully anymore and that a lot of people are de-dollarizing gives this group the comfort in knowing that they can come together, have a meeting where Brunei, Cambodia, Indonesia, Laos, Malaysia, Myanmar, Philippines, Singapore, Thailand, and Vietnam all get together in a room and decide that they're going to use their own currencies instead of somebody else's. That would normally have gotten you democracy dropped on you. And probably a drone strike at that meeting or a bomb that would have gone off Gladio style or whatever. But that didn't happen. And these 10 countries have gotten together and they've said, fuck the United States. And the way they've treated us over the year, Vietnam is like there with their multi-generational birth defects caused by Agent Orange. The horror of napalm is saying, oh, you have an idea of how we can fuck the Americans over? We're all ears here in Vietnam. We'd love to hear it. Yeah. Oh, you want us to not use their currency anymore? Done. Anything else you want us to do? To pay back those assholes for what they did to our beautiful country? Or Southeast Asia in general. All these countries are on the list. I wonder why they want to de-dollarize. I wonder why Cambodia, Laos, and Vietnam want to de-dollarize after the United States dropped more bombs on those three countries than all of World War II combined times two at the authorization of Henry Kissinger with the instruction and operational tactics of Ted Shackley of the CIA. I'm an American and that's the team that I was born on. But man, I watch what America does to these other countries and it's reprehensible. And what they did to Southeast Asia during the Vietnam War is unforgivable. So when these countries come together and decide that they're going to encourage the use of local currencies for economic and financial transactions and cut the United States out, my only question is, what took you so long? And I answered it a couple minutes ago because they would have been bombed. This ASEAN group is very similar to the Gulf Cooperation Council, the GCC. The GCC, you say? Bahrain, Oman, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, Kuwait. They want a single currency, and they've wanted it for over a decade, but same sort of terms and conditions applied that ASEAN faced. They could get behind a gold-backed or maybe even an oil-backed currency for their, again, you're just talking about, you're not talking about personal, consumer currencies necessarily. They're talking about settling cross-border transactions. When the government of one country does a deal with the government of the other country, why do we need to go get dollars and change? You know, why do we have to go through this whole parade? Why don't we just create our own currency? Which is what the GCC wants to do. And the end of the petrodollar system is a perfect time to launch something like that. It's a perfect opportunity to fill the gap, to strengthen their own currencies if they want to. Some countries choose to have weak currencies intentionally because it benefits them in trade. But at least this is the, given the timing of where we are now with the petrodollar arrangement or whatever it even was fizzling out, it opens the door for something else. It at least opens the door for you to consider something else, which is something that hadn't even been talked about for a long, long time. I think regionally there was a little bit of, the petrodollar arrangement was kind of written in pencil in some areas, like Saudi Arabia would do some deals with some countries that weren't necessarily in exchange for US dollars, but by and large, like, it had been a thing for 50 years and now it's not. And if you were looking into the future and you're these Gulf states and you've got a bunch of oil, and we're not getting enough oil anytime soon, despite what the greenies want to tell you, they have to make a decision. Maybe it benefits them to jump on and create a little regional currency for them to use. And maybe that spreads. Maybe that does trickle down to the people, because the people need something at some point, right? But this is most definitely the first step. Let's talk about Africa, shall we? I mean, we're already kind of talking about the Middle East, so we're sort of geographically close. China enters Africa in a variety of ways. Belt and Road is one of them. We'll wrap up with Belt and Road. When China came into Africa, they did what powerful countries have always done, which is they loan money to smaller countries, and such as Kenya and South Africa and Zambia, through the Bank of China. Well, really, they've partnered with plenty of countries in Africa, but the Bank of China came in and said, yeah, let's do some deals. Now, Zambia just changed its laws about using foreign currencies. Anyone using dollars, really anyone using anything other than the Zambian currency, they now have decided that they're going to put you in prison. Forever. They just said they're just going to put you in prison forever. I was like, okay. So maybe Zambia has changed on their relationship with the Bank of China, but Egypt, Nigeria, Morocco, and 24 other African countries are most definitely on board with it. So China is entering this and creating the pretext for a multipolar world by doing what America failed to do. America was so focused on regime changing South America in the 70s and early 80s that it totally dropped the ball on Africa, and China stepped in. China picked that up, and instead of building hospitals for sick Africans as the Chinese do, the Americans were just bombing the shit out of them and forcing the Africans to build graveyards for dead Africans. You know what I mean? So you see that, and you can only run that game long enough, and China comes in and says, listen, we are going to loan you money. We would love to loan you money to help with your infrastructure. We're going to get into this with BRI. It's not the money. It's John Perkins will tell you about this, about, you know, taking loans from countries or big banks, a New Development Bank or World Bank or whatever. You start taking loans from those countries, they come with massive strings that are attached to it. Right. So you always have to be careful, even if you're Africa dealing with China, who has shown you pretty good faith, I would say, over the years. You still need to be, you know, you still need to have your eyes open. So what happened was they created something called the African Development Bank Group. This was formed in 1974. So while the Americans were fucking around in Chile and Argentina and doing all that, the Chinese were looking in Africa. They didn't really jump in until 1985. But when the African Development Bank Group started, China pledged China pledged $60 billion in 2015 during the Forum on China-Africa Cooperation Summit. They basically came in and said, you can use our Agricultural Bank of China, and you can use the China Development Bank, and you can use Bank of China to come in. We've got money. If you guys are interested in it, we'll put $60 billion in and use it. We've got the resources to do it. Frankly, the Chinese would love to do it. They'd love to put their money into something else, right? So to them, this is diversifying away from buying U.S. treasuries, and that they know are going to go boom at some point, and investing in infrastructure in Africa. Now, how are you going to get your money out of it? Well, you have to take a long-term approach to it, of course. When you're talking about building the infrastructure in order to get into Africa and do all this stuff, it takes a while. Africa Growing Together Fund in November of 2014. They put $2 billion into that to use specifically for infrastructure. The African Development Fund, which comes out of this African Development Bank Group, this fund is for social and economic development. 38 countries have received help. More than $45 billion has been distributed since the inception of the African Development Fund. So they're spending money. And where's this money coming from? It's coming from China. It's coming from a bunch of places, but it's mostly coming from China. And this African Development Fund says that they have two pillars. This is according to them. They have two pillars. They want quality infrastructure, sustainable and climate resistant.
Yikes.
And they want governance and capacity building with sustainable debt management. Well, sustainable debt management, you might be able to get from China, because the Chinese rates that they loan money to Africa at is like 2%. It's very low. It's basically the cost of money to them. And so they're not looking to make money on the interest that they loan them. And they don't appear currently, this is currently subject to change, of course, but they don't appear currently to be pulling an economic hitman move like Perkins talked about. They could. And in his third book, he gets into the role of the economic hitman in Africa. They're there, but it's not South America in the 70s. Let's just put it that way. So they're working on it, right? So they're coming together. Let's pivot to this. The Shanghai, it's still kind of banking, but Shanghai Cooperation Organization, SCO, seeking to increase the SCO's role in the creation of a new democratic, fair, political, and economic international order. That's what they want. They want an economic new world order coming out of Shanghai, right? And this is as opposed to what they're saying. They want a democrat. Now, this is what they say. Now, what they say and what they do are obviously subject to change. But what this Shanghai Cooperation Organization is saying they want is like a relatively democratic and fair economic system. And of course, you would want that. You need fairness to the extent that you can get it. And you need economic order to the extent that you can get that. If you want to build on a solid foundation for your country, your business, whatever, if you've got uncertainty, or if it's unfair, one of the things they used in here was fair. If it's unfair, if you have an unfair marketplace, man, that's what you have now. An unfair marketplace, and it creates major problems. And so what the Shanghai Cooperation Organization is saying, listen, we want a level playing field, and we're willing to, as the West pushes the current, what they call rules-based international order. That's what they call it. That's what the current situation is, rules-based international order. And what that means is that the rules don't apply to us, America. And so that we like that because it's our rules and it's top-down authoritarian. This is what the West pushes on people, is rules-based international order. Whenever they say that to Putin, he laughs. And Lavrov, these guys, they just laugh. What the fuck? Talk about a bogus sales pitch, right? These are the countries that are a part of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. You might want to listen, because when they're talking about a new economic world order, these are some interesting countries: China, Russia, India. Okay. So we've got overlap with BRICS. We've got overlap with Belt and Road, and we have Shanghai Cooperation Organization. Those are the three big ones: China, Russia, India. Then they have Pakistan, and then they have Iran, and then they have Belarus. And then four of the stands: Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan, and Kazakhstan. So these 10 countries, that Eastern Europe with all the stands, Central Europe with Belarus, South Asia with Pakistan and India, the Middle East with Iran, and then you've got Asia with China and Russia. If you looked at this on a map, they've got a pretty large segment of Eurasia And this group is responsible as of last year, 2023. This group was accounts for $24.4 trillion of GDP. To put that in perspective, is $24 trillion a lot? It's $6 trillion more than the EU, if that helps. So if you're looking, if you're going to base this on how are we doing as a business sales-wise in terms of GDP, and we're using that as a figure. The EU was at about $18 trillion. The Shanghai Cooperation Organization, which is all the stands, China, Russia, India, Pakistan, Belarus, this group was even bigger by about a third, actually. So substantially bigger. They want to create their own bank, like BRICS. I hate banks, but I understand why they're doing it. And this is the foundation for the future new, I don't know, I would call it maybe like security architecture. Is that in Eurasia, right? If you've got this group together and they're all working and they are geographically fairly close to one another, you can secure it. And of course, you overlay the Shanghai Cooperation Organization on top of Belt and Road. And when you do that, there's a lot of overlap here. And so you are really taking what Zbigniew Brzezinski called the global chessboard. The most important piece in the global chessboard is Eurasia. That's what he said. And that if you control, he who controls Eurasia controls the world. So what are they doing? They are controlling Eurasia. That's what they're doing. Now, America would love to control Eurasia. They just can't. They're not there. They're not physically there. So instead, America has to pretend to control the Western Hemisphere through the Monroe Doctrine. And that, I guess, is kind of working, but not great. They already destroyed, if you remember when Brzezinski was talking about the most important piece on the global chessboard of countries in that, he actually named, it wasn't just Eurasia. The name that he put on that list was Afghanistan. That Afghanistan was going to be, was actually the most, because it was the center point of Europe, Asia, and the Middle East intersecting through Afghanistan. Very difficult to conquer. People had been there for a long, long time. Tribal, you know the deal. So if you noticed, Afghanistan is not on this list, but it will be. I assure you, they're going to expand. And you're starting to see some of this expansion, right? When we talk about security architecture, what do we make of the fact that Russia's new pact with North Korea makes this security part kind of interesting? Because it's a mutual defense initiative between Russia and North Korea, right? So if Russia gets attacked, North Korea's got to jump in. Russia is part of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. It's part of Belt and Road, part of BRICS. What if somebody does attack North Korea and Russia is obligated to get involved? Then does Russia, through obligation, drag these other countries in? Something to consider, right? I mean, I don't know that we're going to. I have been told that when you hear North Korea, did X, Y, and Z, just replace that with the CIA. So I don't know. Maybe. This is from Vladimir Putin talking about North Korea. He said, the long-term goals for further expansion of cooperation in politics, economy, energy, agriculture, high technologies, and innovation are stated in the project of development strategy of SCO until 2035. So he's talking about the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. So this group is, they're looking to expand. And so they have what they call, they have observers and they have dialogue partners. Observers, countries that are just kind of taking a peek to see if maybe they could be a part of this. Mongolia is one. Makes sense. They're located in Eurasia. And Afghanistan. So they're going to get Afghanistan. You just wait. It's just a bit of a mess right now. You know, what with the Biden administration leaving $85 billion of gear behind or whatever they said they did. So we'll see. But there are five dialogue partners that are currently in communication with the SCO and more than likely will join them at some point. These countries include Turkey, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, Qatar, and Azerbaijan. So this group that's currently a part of. So these are the seven that are five dialogue partners sitting on the side, two that are observers. It's kind of like BRICS, you know. Nice thing you guys have got going here. We might want to join. Cool. All right, we'll check you out. Fill out an application. We'll take a look. We'll be in touch. But the current version of SEO, 80% of the Eurasian landmass already. That's without Mongolia and Afghanistan. Mongolia is surprisingly bigger than you think it is. It's 40% of the world's population. 40% of the world's population, just in this group of 10 countries. 25% of the world's GDP, a quarter of the GDP. That is a lot. But here's where it gets real interesting. They have 44% of the world's natural gas. And you know what? If the United States gets on the wrong side of these people and they shut off the natural gas, then we can only use our own natural gas, which we will use, but we would prefer not to. And they also have 20% of the world's global oil reserves. But just wait. Just wait until these dialogue partners, Saudi Arabia, UAE, and Qatar and Azerbaijan officially jump in. Holy fucking shit. They'll be like BRICS. They have all the oil producers. And despite what the Biden administration says, and I hate to break it to Kamala Harris, the electric yellow school buses, man, that just ain't ever happening. Okay, we are not equipped for that. I'm sorry. We've done plenty of shows on the green revolution, the electric vehicle revolution. It is not ready for prime time. It's not going to work. It's not going to work. It's not my opinion that it's not going to work. I can prove it mathematically. It's not going to work. So good luck with that. But you know, you can push this Green New Deal and we're going to go to EVs and everything just as soon as we finish this war with China, who produces 90% of the world's neodymium and refines the other 10% that it doesn't produce, right? It refines 100% of it. And you're going to have an electric car revolution when your sworn enemy controls the one component that you need to make the electric car work? Oh, good luck to you. Good luck. They talked about the guy representing China when they were in this Shanghai Cooperation Organization meeting, said that they work on a policy of three mutuals: mutual respect, mutual sensitivity, and mutual interest. Okay. That is most definitely not America's policy. You might've noticed. And they talk about this area called the Middle Corridor. The Middle Corridor, I think, is you'll probably hear that term more and more. It links China to Europe. It's through Kazakhstan, the Caspian Sea, Georgia, Turkey, and the Black Sea. And one of the things that this middle corridor does, which is interesting, is that it bypasses Russia. Even though Russia is part of this group, it bypasses Russia intentionally. And the reason why they set this up this way, so that it bypassed Russia intentionally, was because of the sanctions that the United States was putting on Russia. And what they didn't want to have happen is they didn't want to bring that baggage into this, because if you were unable to get your goods into Russia because of sanctions, it was going to make this middle corridor less impactful. And so they just said, if it's okay with you, Russia, we're just going to like go around you. To which I'm not sure Russia minds. They're probably fine with this. Let's talk about the new Silk Road. We'll wrap up with this. This is the Belt and Road Initiative. Silk Road was in your history books thousands of years ago. The Chinese built it. Trading partner connected China with Europe, right? And it was extremely important for trading. It's what it was set up for. But and nowadays we have airplanes and we don't really need to necessarily truck everything or put everything on a train, but we could and we should and we will and we are. And that's the direction that China is taking this, because what they have done with the Belt and Road Initiative is a multi-decade, multi-trillion dollar, multi-country reimagining of the old Silk Road for trade. And it's about time, right? Now, there's going to be real concerns about the Belt and Road Initiative, but one of them is not whether or not they're going to do anything with it. Because they have already, by as of last year, 2023, they have already spent $1 trillion on it, $1,000 billion on this project. And they're not screwing around. and it's going to go on for a while, and it's going to look, when you can take a long-term view of this, like China does, and look out 50 or 100 years, as you should when you're a nation. You don't as a person, but if you're a country, you should be taking a long-term approach. Of course, politicians don't, because they're temporary, and so it's hard to have a temporary guy make long-term decisions that they're never going to be there to enjoy, unless you're like the Rockefellers or like the Rothschilds and people like that, who are fine with intergenerational applications and plans. So it's interesting to take a look at this, because China knows it's going to take 30 to 40 years to build this whole thing out, but 30 or 40 years will come and go. And at some point, this will be finished. And what it does is it puts ports in China, multiple ports in China. There are already ports in China, but it gives them more. Vietnam, Malaysia, Indonesia, Sri Lanka, India, Kenya, Djibouti, Greece, and Italy. That's the maritime routes, right? So you've got that, and it's a two-part, it's belt, and it's sea and land. And so you've got that going on. You've got the rail that runs through China, Russia, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Pakistan, Iran, Turkey, Germany, Belgium, and Italy. And along the way, all of the little places that these train tracks or actual roads run through, they're all going to get a little bit of something, a little bit of money, a little bit of revenue, a little bit of help, a little bit. They're going to, you know, things happen when they built the interstate highway system in the United States. You know, people were smart and they built close, you know, retail close to the highways, because they knew that this was going to be a pipeline. And so if you want to create retail or retail businesses, probably put it close to the highway, right? Because that's where all the people are going to be. I can envision a scenario in which there's an economic boom geographically corresponding to where these rail lines are, where they go through, a formerly obscure city in Kazakhstan all of a sudden becomes extremely relevant when the BRI runs $1 trillion worth of goods through there a year. You know what I mean? Like, all of a sudden, that's, you're relevant in some respects. So they're going to be building bridges. They're going to be building ports. They're going to be building rail lines and roads and airports and all of the very boring but necessary infrastructure projects that you need. But here's the thing. When you're China and you do these deals, it makes the Americans very nervous, because when you start talking about building ports, then, and you're China, and they've already taken over the Gwadar port in Pakistan, not by force. I mean, they have an arrangement to run it, but they're already running the major port in Pakistan. And so what that means is that you know what's coming in and going out. and that is information that is extremely relevant and important for, I don't know, China to know what's coming into this port. Maybe nothing, maybe something, but we're going to know. It's information that they will have that the Americans will not have. And of course, this there's also a massive corridor that's going north from this port in Pakistan, straight up straight up through the Himalayas, and they're making these economic regions, like tax-free regions. So it's not just that they're building these rail lines and these ports and all of this infrastructure. They're then putting an overlay legally of like tax exempt status for a lot of these portions of the Belt and Road Initiative. So it's really enticing, extremely, like the loan terms are surprisingly good at right around 2%. You would expect them to be gouging. You would expect them to pull what the IMF and World Bank does with the economic hitman and get them in situations where they've fallen behind on their payments and they extract some tangible asset from them in exchange for being behind on their loans. That's not going to happen here so much, because China is running the Belt and Road Initiative and creating these banks and then loaning them to these countries, but these countries are part of BRI. I suppose there could be some financial enslavement happening here on some levels. We'll see how it all turns out, but it won't be from cranking up the interest rates to 11% on these guys all of a sudden. They're not doing adjustable rate mortgages on the BRI. They're not doing no doc ninja loans on this, where it's like, oh, well, yeah, sure, your rate was 2% now, but you know, now it's 2027 and it's spiked to 11%. You owe us a bunch of, it's, they didn't set it up that way. But yeah, and not to be outdone, of course, we've talked about this before. The West has an answer. Like, don't worry, everybody, it's fine. We figured out a solution to the problem. The West is going to create something called the Global Gateway Project. And they call this a true alternative to the BRI. But, you know, when they showed this at the EU in December of last year, they came out and they said, we are going to be an alternative to the BRI and their whatever, however many trillion dollars that they have, they're expected to pour into this over the course of the 30, 40 years, I think $30 trillion or some astronomical. So this group in the EU, the West says, this global gateway project is going to be great. It's going to be massive. We have come in with a ton of money, $340 billion. And the BRI people are like, we've already spent triple that. We've already spent triple that. And we have plans to spend 10 times that in the next 10 years. What are you talking? $340 billion is a lot of money. But it's not a lot of money for a massive infrastructure project. And they want to run routes from India to Europe, all right, through their partner countries that in the UAE and Saudi Arabia and Greece and Israel into Western Europe. One of the things you notice is that some of these countries are double dipping, right? Like UAE and Saudi Arabia and everything, like they're in BRICS, like they're partnering with the other team. If you in the West think that you're going to do this global gateway project, you better hurry. You better step on it, because my assumption is that it's probably more likely that Saudi Arabia decides that they're going to UAE, Saudi Arabia, and maybe not Greece and Israel, but those two are more than likely going to lean towards the Belt and Road, because, you know, why wouldn't they? I this doesn't make much sense. So, but just so you understand the scam, Ursula von der Leyen, who's the worst, said that the EU is getting involved in order to focus on three things. These are the three things that the West, that the EU is excited about with this global gateway project, that they intend to spend a fraction of what the BRI is. And would you like to hear what their three focuses are? Because they're stupid, as you would imagine. But they might be dumber than you think. The three focuses of a massive $340 billion infrastructure project, keyword, infrastructure project, are focusing on sustainable development, global health security, and fighting climate change. So, woke nonsense, COVID nonsense, WEF nonsense. You know what? I would like to inform the EU and the Global Gateway Project. You might not have noticed this or not, but there are 150 countries that are already partnered with the Belt and Road Initiative. Did you know that? You can't strong arm people into joining your stupid Global Gateway Project that's focusing on you're going to be fighting climate change by creating infrastructure? How? You're going to focus on global health security, the COVID, by building a port or an airport. Maybe you could build an airport that is free of COVID, where nobody has to wear a mask. Wouldn't you? Maybe you could do that. Maybe for your sustainable development, you can build a port out of bamboo. Maybe you could try that. Why don't we try that, you dumb monkeys at the EU that think that you're going to parachute in at the last second and build an infrastructure project that competes with China, who's been putting this thing together for literally 20 years and has 40 more years to go and has trillions of dollars at their disposal? You'll lose this. You might as well take that $340 billion and burn it. You really should. I mean, do anything else with it. The EU is going in with, let's compare this. BRI has 150 countries. The EU's group has 30 partners, and they're focused on stopping transgendered climate change or something. I mean, it's tough. It's tough for me to listen to these plans because I am an American. I come from the West. I should want what's best for America and what's best for the West, because that would be what's best for me. But boy, if I'm being intellectually honest, I just have to say America has treated these countries like such shit over the years, especially the Southeast Asian countries. The fact that these countries are grouping up to say we're not participating anymore, I applaud them. Really? What took you so long? I guess maybe you had to find your strength or get together or wait for America to devolve into this clown show it is, or I don't know, something, but something, some alarm bell went off around the world and everyone realized, oh, America is not a serious nation anymore. We can do whatever the fuck we want and they won't bomb us. We can sell oil in exchange for something other than dollars. We can build an infrastructure project that goes around Europe, Asia, Africa, and the Middle East, and nobody's going to stop us. We can actually do this now. We can partner. We can use our own currencies for cross-border transactions. Why don't we do this? Well, the answer is they are. They are. And you're going to live through it. You're going to live through the switchover into a multipolar world. Get ready for it. But theoretically, it helps to check both sides. Now, I don't like centralization, but if you've got one group that has centralized power and now another group comes up and it has power, it theoretically should check the other one. Doesn't mean it's going to happen. Doesn't mean it's going to be peace, but it means that there's now at least another group that the American Empire New World Order, the original New World Order, has to worry about now. So look, I mean, they got together and stuffed the bully into the locker. And I can't, you know, listen, can't say that we didn't have it coming. But of course, when you do that, you run the risk of creating a scenario at the school where instead of there just being the American Empire going around bullying people and, you know, doing all that, there's now two bullies at the school. That could be a problem. So you have to make sure that you don't end up with that scenario. So keep your eyes open. You know, it's better to not have two bullies, but America is has turned into an embarrassment. I think we've opened the door for a lot of other countries to build these projects that they had maybe had on the drawing boards, thought about for a long time, but always thought the American Empire would rain down destruction on them. Those days are gone. Perhaps you've seen the president that we have. It's not good. Come on, man. Hey, if you like this episode, you can take the additional step right now of sharing it with your friends and family. Hope you'll rate the show. If you think I've done a good job, I'd appreciate 5 stars. If you want to connect with me, the website, macroaggressions.io. Thanks, everybody. I'll talk to you again soon.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 27th through July 7th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.